Tours family, welcome to another episode. You know the drill. I'm here with my beautiful wife, Deb.
Hi, guys.
And we thought it was time to have another episode with a guest on our show. Deb, why don't you introduce our guest?
I'm always so excited when we have guests. Thank you for joining us. This is a family friend, Lariana, and she is a friend of a family, a little bit younger generation. And so I'll let you say hello.
Hello, y'all. Thank y'all so much for having me here.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. You know, we met kind of at a I guess you'd say a little party, just kind of watching some football games at our mutual friend's house, and we just started talking, and you have a beautiful walk with Jesus, and we had wonderful conversation, just kind of, you know, we didn't even watch the football game, I think.
Yeah. We talked most of the night about Jesus.
Oh yeah,
we talked for forever. It was an awesome conversation.
Yeah, so we wanted to invite you in just because you are a different generation than we are. I think it's so critical to sit and listen to what, you know, what you feel the youth is doing well with, what they're struggling with, what the church may or may not be addressing for the, you know, the younger generation. So just to give some context, you're in your 20s and, you know, you're in kind of, what Calvary Chapel would call a young adult, that kind of that age range for that ministry. So, yeah, thanks for coming in and chatting with us.
Thank y'all so much for having me here. I love having conversations like this, so I'm excited.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of good, even just prepping for the episode, just sitting out there chit-chatting. We had just amazing things. You had so many good questions and good topics that we wanted to, you know, that were good potential options to make episodes out of. So we're just going to kind of see how this flows and where this goes. But, you know, you had some questions, ironically enough, I think the last episode that we recorded was on singleness, but you had some questions just on marriage, you know, coming from a younger generation. So what do you got?
So one of the questions that I have for y'all is that, you know, you guys have obviously pursued like a God-centered marriage. And I think that, you know, obviously like I so clearly see that between you guys.
Thank you.
And so I had a question for y'all. It's just like, how would y'all advise people, like, and not only people, but like just young adults like myself who are trying to pursue that God-centered marriage? Because I feel like, you know, times are so different right now. And like, I feel like not everyone is just waiting, like not willing to try to pursue that, you know? So I just wanted to get you guys' perspective.
Debbie, you want to take the first shot?
I could take the first shot. How to pursue a God-centered marriage. Well, I think in order to have a God-centered marriage, you have to be rooted in Jesus so much that the man that's searching you out is going to have to go through Jesus first.
Yeah.
That's number one. When you fall in love with the Lord and he becomes your husband, as the Bible says, you know, we're his bride, your passion and your drive to love and serve the Lord is going to attract a man that wants that too, I think, first and foremost. Being someone that I think that is not necessarily seeking out marriage, but is very open to what do you have in store for me, Lord? Because I know that there are many people who desire marriage and God might not have that in store for them immediately. We had talked about a growing process that had to happen for both of us before God prepared us for marriage. And so just being patient with the Lord, if you know you're eager to find a marriage and have a covenant with another wonderful human being that loves the Lord, God's got that person for you, and trusting that his timing is always going to be better than yours.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Always.
Always, always.
And then I would say, I didn't really pursue you. I think we kind of connected.
What are you talking about? You totally pursued me. You totally pursued me. Oh, my gosh.
You blush.
No, I mean, for me, we even talked about it at the dinner table out there, where you can be praying for something, especially if you're praying for a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, to the younger generation, what I would say is, you know, you see the instant gratification becoming such a vein of consistency in the younger generation. I place an order on Amazon and tomorrow, whatever I wanted is here. That sometimes when you pray, actually the vast majority of my prayers, God's answer has been not yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get impatient. And that, I know you asked the question in as it pertains to a relationship, like I desired to have a wife. I always felt that I wanted to be a husband, but it's also a lot bigger than that. It is God has the ability. His answer can absolutely be not yet, in addition to yes and no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times we handle the yeses and nos better than we handle the not yet.
Oh, for yeah. sure.
So
because it's just like that period of like waiting, but also like anticipation, you know, like when is it going to happen? You know?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I've always prayed about it because like I've been single for really, really long time. And I've always prayed to God. I was like, you know, God, like, I know that you have like the right person out there for me. And, you know, I'm not like, I don't want to, you know, rush your plans because obviously like your plan is way better than mine. So, but I've also always said like, you know, if it's not in your plan for me, like, you know, I'm okay with that. Like I will learn to be, you know, okay with it, you know, cause he has my best interests. He knows more about me than I do. So
and
amen.
For both of us, the biggest growth that we had was when we were single.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is nothing wrong with just being single and being in love with Jesus and living that way. This is the time in your life when you can learn to have a servant's heart so that, you know, if God opens that door, serving that man would just come naturally because you're literally a server for work. So to sit and, you know, serve at church or do outreach, those types of things.
Right.
It truly can change you and it does prepare you for marriage.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, I think the instant gratification is a big thing that scares me with the youth because I mean,
sure. You're on an algorithm and like, you're like, sometimes, and I've noticed it even with myself, not just the younger generation, I think our brains are being trained by social media and like,
yes,
you're watching something and you don't even wait to get to the end. Like if it's, let's say, a beauty reveal, mm-hmm. I don't want to see all the other stuff in the middle. Just give me the beauty reveal.
Yeah.
So a 30-second clip, you've now shot down to like 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are being kind of almost trained by the culture to be so driven by the instant. And that's not how it works in marriage either. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no instant fix in marriage. I think that when you, have the right person and you're working on resolving things because marriage is going to, you're going to come up with things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always an instant fix.
Yeah.
So we have to actually recognize, wow, I need to slow down enough where I'm not rushing through life so that when things go good or bad in my marriage, I'm not looking for the next and the next and mm-hmm. the next.
Absolutely. I think that like, you know, with a lot of things in our life, like we're so quick to want to get to the end result, you know,
mm-hmm.
that we miss everything in between. Like we're like people like myself, like I am eager to like, you know, be in a marriage with somebody, but I don't want to miss like, you know, everything that I'm in between. You know what I mean? Like it's that end result that we want to get to.
It's amazing, you know, we have the sayings like it's not the destination, it's the journey. But
right.
then what you just said is completely the opposite. And so we'll sit there and know we want the destination.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody wants to lose 20 pounds, but nobody wants to put in all that work it takes to lose 20 pounds.
Hard work.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, and that's why I said things like serving, because that is you being active with Jesus along the way.
Mm-hmm.
It you don't have that end destination in mind, but you're sitting there saying, you know, you're taking delight in the Lord and he'll give you the desires of your heart. So whatever that relationship is, take delight in the Lord now. This is a season to take delight in him.
Yeah.
And he'll give you, he'll blow your mind as to what he can do.
I remember I was watching this video of this woman. She was a pastor and she was talking about singleness. And she goes like, you know, maybe God has you in a period of singleness because he's saying like, you know, devote yourself to me and I will mold you into the person that you need to be for your.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And doing the exact same the other direction, mm-hmm. you know, he's absolutely prepping your husband for you. So he's, you know, if you're supposed to, I'm going to say the word that a lot of people get put off by, but if you're supposed to submit to him, you want to submit to someone that you can love and trust and is going to spiritually lead you. You don't want to submit to someone that
doesn't,
you know, has gambling addictions, yeah, or, you know, this, you know, there's no respect there. So, mm-hmm, you know, for someone to be a spiritual leader, sometimes, I mean, God made me wait until I was almost 40 to say,
he was like, yeah, we got to work on Mike over here.
Yeah, it was rough, but yeah, it's interesting.
I think there's some good things you can do in the waiting, that come up in marriage all the time. I'm very much about, how do I communicate with my husband? Mm-hmm. And because you're going to have a friendship, not just a romance, you want to be able to hone how you speak and how you communicate.
Yeah.
You know, if you catch yourself and you're someone who doesn't articulate well, like, for instance, Mike and I definitely say more words, but I know when I need to get a point across, he's very like concise. So yeah, if I really, really need to get my point across, I need to be able to just say, this is what I need, sweetheart, and say it clear, concise, and give him what I'm actually, I don't want him to have to dance around and try to figure me out.
Yeah.
And so when you learn good communication skills, that's a useful tool, not only for friendships and work relationships, but for the future marriage you're going to have.
Right.
I think that conflict resolution is a great way to pursue things while you're waiting for marriage. Mm-hmm. Is like, okay, you're going to have conflicts with your spouse.
Yeah.
There's no way you're getting around that.
Mm-hmm.
How do I resolve conflict? And you can practice that with friends and family members,
mm-hmm,
now, and really just be observant to how you do certain things that are going to come up in marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's so many things, even just the way you communicate, that's so useful to just even friendship. You know, forget a romantic relationship, but just what Deb said, understanding what to say and when to say it. I think that's so critical in our evangelism for non-believers. I mean, you work in a restaurant. The restaurant industry is a tough,
oh yeah,
tough industry. And we were even talking about some of the people that you know, witnessed to. And you, for as young as you were, you had some pretty calculated things where you were already listening to the Holy Spirit. So that's a wonderful thing. So how do you navigate the communication? You know, what are you working on there? Because that will be critical down the road. But you had, yeah, some great things that you were talking about with like your coworkers.
Yeah. I am always like open. I'm so open to listening to like each one of my coworkers' testimony. You know, I think it's like an awesome thing. And, you know, I definitely want to encourage others to through my speaking. But, you know, like I said, like I was actually talking about this with my dad the other day. He was just like, you know, sometimes like you just got to back away for just a second, you know, and just kind of let the seed grow. You know, you don't want to like push too hard to the point to where you push people away, because that's the opposite of what God is intending for you to do. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you even say planting the seed, you can overwater a seed and you can over fertilize a seed. Yeah. So yeah, being able to plant the seed, and that's super hard. Like Deb, you know, we understand having a prodigal child. You want to water that seed every chance you get.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do you find the right balance when talking to coworkers or just anyone that you're witnessing to, family members?
I think I just find the balance of just be open to like whatever the conversation goes to, you know, like, and you know, if you're even having a conversation with a non-believer, just go into it like with an open heart, because I firmly believe that like through these conversations, you can both gain something out of it. You know, like you can gain some answers to questions that like you might not have even thought of, mm-hmm, or you might have just answered somebody's question. You know, you can both gain something.
There's always, you know, something to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you even had, you know, you've mentioned that you had kind of some rough few years. You lost, was it 3 grandparents in 2 years? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you have friends and family members that are non-believers or skeptics or this, that, and the other. That had to prompt some questions.
Yeah.
What were the questions that you got? How did you respond to them? How did you react to all that?
I think the number one question that I had when I was going through that stuff is just, why? You know, like I think a lot of the times, like when we go through something in our lives, we have the question of why? You know, like what happened? Like where did we go wrong? Like we have so many questions. And you know, I think the one thing that, you know, helped me kind of come to an understanding is just really just leaning in on my faith and just understanding that, like, you know, obviously God knows better than I do. And, you know, it's certainly like a sad thing to go through, but you know, it happened, and obviously God has a reason for everything, and we might not know the reason, but he does. So I think that was just something that, like, it helped me kind of get through like the hard times, you know, and just allowing myself to feel, you know, allow myself to feel and to be angry, to be sad, but to be like, you know, like to grieve with Jesus, you know.
And feelings are can be good, and feelings can be bad, right?
Yeah.
Like you can feel all sorts of things. You know, one of the things that I always talk about is the test of time for feelings. A feeling is of God when it either endures or grows over time instead of diminishes. So you can sit there, you know, in the moment. You can be really angry or really excited or this, that, and the other, but does it endure the test of time? You know, one of the ways truly that I consider myself blessed in a marriage is just the love that I still have for Deb after 5.5 years.
Oh, I would hope so.
But it's something though that as a guy that was single, I didn't. You hear people talk about, well, I want my love to deepen and this, that, and the other, and it's like telling someone what the Grand Canyon looks like, right? It's seeing it in a picture, but to go experience it yourself, you have a totally different appreciation for it. So feelings can be real tricky. And that can, you know, any that can hit anything. Like we said, maybe you're single and you don't want to be single, or you have parents or kids, anything, anybody passing away, you're going to have a wave of feelings.
Yes. And feelings can be good barometers, but sometimes they're, you know, feelings are not facts. So like when you're thinking about, you know, sometimes you feel so bad about something, but that may not always be the fact. You know, you could be, I could feel so angry about something, but the fact of the matter is, do I need to stay in that anger? And I love that God lets us grapple with the whys and the anger and the uncertainty of just life in general, whether it's in a marriage, whether it's in losing family members, whether it's, you know, you get betrayed by a friend and you're just like, why? Like he lets us grapple in that. And sometimes we can also realize, like, yeah, my feelings are valid, but they're not always true. Like they're, you know.
And earlier you mentioned you're a musician. Have you
Oh,
ever
yeah.
picked up your guitar player, and you said you're self-taught. Have you ever just sat behind the guitar and got emotions out? Has music ever turned into that for you?
Oh, yeah.
And
I,
singing or playing the guitar or all
or
the
both.
above?
It's both, actually. So yeah, it's singing is definitely a way that I can kind of like, you know, express myself and stuff. So yeah, it's definitely it's therapeutic, you know. It's therapeutic,
Oh,
it's beautiful, it's
yeah, I'm a drummer. It's
You
definitely
drum. Oh, really?
therapy. Yeah, it's definitely therapy.
And I write, so we all have an outlet.
Me
Oh,
too.
nice.
Yeah, and as a musician, one of the things I was not self-taught. I was taught by someone that I still to this day adore. He's a great friend, he and his wife. And one of the things that may resonate with you is, you know, when he was teaching me how to drum, I study a very unique form of drumming out of Japan. And so he travels over to Japan to learn. And a lot of times he would put us through training that was very painful, like literally physically painful. And, you know, we hated it and we didn't want to be there. And it, you know, he's building muscles in areas that you don't have muscle and so on and so forth. But a lot of times he would say, I know the drummer that I'm trying to turn you into. You don't know that drummer.
That's
You have to trust me in the training and in the process and in the pain, because I know what the end result for Michael Snyder, the drummer, is. And so many times God knows what that painting looks like. He knows what that destination looks like, and we don't like the journey. And I think that's one of my big fears too for the youth is, what happens when God asks you to go down a path that you don't want to, but he's sitting here going, hey, I need you to walk this path. You're gonna lose a parent. You're going to
right.
any number. I mean, even one of the great topics you brought up out there when we were prepping for this is just yeah. when you turn into a Christian, just the difficulties that are going to happen potentially.
And you had said you don't really feel like the church addresses that in any real capacity for people.
Because I feel like, you know, people are so like, one of the biggest misconceptions that people have is just that, you know, when you become a Christian, your life is going to be peaches and cream.
That's so not.
it's so not. And I will be the first to say that. Like, it is not easy. You know, like yeah. there are going to be certain times where like you kind of grapple with it, you know, and they say like, excuse me, when they say that a lot of times when you get closer to God, like your relationships might start to change. Your mm-hmm. so many different things around you may start to change because certain things just won't matter to you.
Yeah, your priorities change.
Yeah, and it's hard to like let go of old. It's like letting go of your old self, you know?
Yeah.
You might not have to let go of everything, but it's just certain people might leave your life. Certain things may leave your life. And that's hard. That's hard.
Yeah. Especially when you love the person.
Yeah.
You know, it's a person that was a good friend, but they do like to go to the bar and this, that, and the other. And you had good times with them at the bar and they truly are a good friend. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden you change and the bar is no longer important to you. And the things in their eyes that you used to do and have a good time together, you don't want to do anymore.
Yeah.
You still love that person, but that season in your life is now gone.
So it's like you just don't care anymore, you know, like you don't care. Like you don't care about like that stuff, you know. Yeah.
It's a natural divide that starts to happen, and people that aren't saved look at it like you're rejecting them, or that, well, you think you're better than me. You don't want to go to the bar anymore. Yeah. And that's mm-hmm. never what the case is. It's mm-hmm. just like, I love you, but I just don't have a desire to be a part of this anymore. I'm not telling you one way or the other what you need to do with your life at this point, mm-hmm. maybe down the road. But, yeah. You know, like I remember coming into the faith and just people in my life were like, well, what do you mean you don't want to party?
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't want to watch that on TV? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know. I was always very aware when I got newly saved what my temptations were. Mm-hmm. And I would say this to any new Christian is know what your temptations are. Like I knew I struggled with lust. Yeah. There were certain TV shows that I watched before I was a Christian that were like, no big deal.
Yeah.
And when I got saved, I was like, wow, like that's going to make me be really tempted. Like, you know, there was always sex scenes. There were always like things that were like tempting. And I'm like, I don't want to put that in front of my eyes.
Oh yeah.
So when you stop watching certain shows, people are like, well, what's wrong with you? Like,
yeah,
you know, and that stuff's never talked about in church really, but mm-hmm. you do become, you start walking in another direction and yeah. some people will walk with you and some people will be on their own path and they mm-hmm. won't walk with you.
Yeah.
And there is that kind of like dying to self
yeah.
where that person doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. The girl that went to the bar, the girl that liked, you know, certain things, just I don't like. I tried it all and believe me, it's not fulfilling. I'm done. Like
yeah.
I'm going in this path. You're either going to come with me and I would love for you to come with me
yeah.
or you're just going to be on the path that we were on together before.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, everyone just like kind of takes their own path, you know, and like you said, like you want them to come with you, but you know, like God gives us free will and they chose to go like a different path, you know.
Yeah, they chose to stay the way of the world and you're on the path, you know, running towards Jesus. And
yeah,
people don't know how to necessarily grapple with that. So that's as a new believer, that's kind of really hard. I do wish the church would address that a little bit more.
Yeah. And I also feel like another thing that the church like doesn't really talk about is just people have like this kind of like interpretation of you where it's just like, you know, like when you become a Christian, it's like you're supposed to be perfect, you know. And I was like, I always tell people whenever I have conversations like this, I was like, you know, listen, just because I pray and read the Bible, listen, I am perfect. Like I'm not perfect at all.
Yeah, if you're coming to file, they're going to be surely disappointed.
Oh,
yeah. I'm going to blow that up.
Yeah.
I always say, like, you know, I'm probably the farthest person from perfect. It's just, you know, I struggle with sin every day, but, you know, God carries me through it. And like, that's just that, you know?
And I think when you approach it like that, it's so much more real.
Yeah.
Like, you're not coming out. I'm not better than anybody.
Oh, yeah.
I'm broken.
Yeah.
And God is putting me back together and making something beautiful out of the brokenness.
Mm-hmm.
But.
And I think you also have to be careful, though, too, as a Christian. We can say things so frequently that it loses its value. And I think one of those things is, you know, pastor standing from a pulpit up there saying, I'm not perfect, or we're all sinners.
Yeah.
That's something that's said all the time in churches, but the reality of it is you really got to sit down with people and have conversations, because from a pulpit, a lot of times they skip over the true ugliness of sin. Mm. I don't know if they don't have time to address it, but if you're trying to break free from addiction, man, that can be ugly. That's
some messy stuff right
there. You're on your hands and knees going through the mud, mucking through it, and it is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, one of the questions I would have for you is, you know, as the younger generation, is there an appetite in the younger generation to be mentored?
To be honest, I believe there is, because, you know, with the recent events that have been happening, like I always say, like, there's been like a switch, you know, like people are becoming like more hungrier for Jesus, and people are becoming hungrier to learn more about like the faith and stuff. So I think that there is definitely like a hunger.
And when you say recent events, is this Charlie Kirk? Is this COVID? Is it everything? Kind of what was
everything, but especially like, you know, with what happened with Charlie Kirk, like people, there are so many different like testimonies that you hear of ever since that happened, you know, like people have been like, after that happened, like I picked up the Bible for the first time in 10 years, you know, like there are so many more people that are coming to know Jesus. And it's unfortunate the situation that had to happen for that to happen. But at the same time, like, you know, I think that God had a purpose for that to happen, because he knew that like there are so many more people that were going to come to him, you know?
Yeah. And it's so interesting how death or trauma and so on and so forth can have that type of response. I mean, we already mentioned your grandparents passing. Now we're talking about Charlie Kirk and so on and so forth. And
yeah,
I see a lot of young people asking questions like, you know, again, why did God take Charlie Kirk? Why did God take 3 grandparents in 2 years for me? Why I had a brother. Why did my brother pass away? Mm-hmm. So many times death. And you know, I hear a lot of answers, and there's a lot of good answers, but there's one good answer for me. It was a good answer that I never hear anyone else talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that you hear Christians always say God is perfect. That doesn't mean imperfect things don't happen. But what it does mean is God's sovereign over that imperfection. Mm-hmm. And he has one goal in mind. That one goal is to save as many people as he can.
Yeah.
And by taking Charlie Kirk, by taking my brother,
mm-hmm.
and I would challenge you or any of your family members, by taking your grandparents, 3 grandparents in 2 years, that's no joke, man.
Yeah.
But God is perfect. You already told us your grandparents were saved.
Oh, yeah.
And if he's in the business of saving souls, and that is his number one goal, head and shoulders, how did that death impact
what
soul chasing?
Right.
Look at how many people are having conversation about Jesus because of what happened with Charlie Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
You've already mentioned some friends and family members that you had conversation with because they were struggling. Why, man, three grandparents over 2 years.
Yeah.
Why? Well, when you start looking at it through that lens of his job, God's job, and what he is after as souls, they wouldn't even be asking that question had he not done that. Now he's presenting you with an opportunity to do plant seeds.
Yeah. And it's like, it's unfortunate, the situations, but something so good came out of it, you know? It's like, it's kind of weird, like, how that works. But at the same time, it's just like, looking back on it, it's just like, again, something so good came out of something so terrible, you know?
Absolutely. And he's always in the business of bringing life out of death,
mm-hmm.
right? That's his resurrection is, there's death and then there's life. And yeah. Everything that you had said about how many souls is God going to bring based on when this event happens at this time in history, how many people are going to be so rocked by this that it brings a sheer curiosity. Like, when you think about it, here is a man that by all accounts is following after Jesus so passionately that he is reaching, you know, I don't, maybe even millions, but by the time you take social media into account, and God knew the perfect timing to pull in as many souls as possible, the ones that were on the fence, the ones that were curious, the ones that are even grappling, like, that doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem fair. God wants those people too.
Yeah.
It's in that grapple where God wants to, he wants you to wrestle with him.
Mm-hmm.
When you stop wrestling, that's when, like, the heart gets just hard.
Mm-hmm.
When there's no wrestle, the heart is just like, yeah, I'm done. There's nothing to wrestle with. I'm building a wall against God.
Mm-hmm.
And so all those people, there is a perfect timing. Even when I think about my own parents leaving this world, like, he's going to do everything he can to pull in unbelieved family members in the grief of their loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you notice? Do you notice either within yourself or your generation, just what are people looking for? They ask the question, you know, hey, why take Charlie Kirk? But what else are they wrestling with? Either yourself or your generation. What are you noticing?
Like, you're asking, like, what people are wrestling with?
Yeah. Just, is it, are they... I mean, there's got to be, I would assume, as someone that's a generation, you know, older than you, that some of this is when somebody like a Charlie Kirk is taken and a younger person is wrestling with why would God do that, they're in pursuit of truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what are the pursuits that you're noticing in the younger generation? What are they longing for? What are you even longing for?
I honestly think that, like, you know, people were just longing for, like, just answers, but, like, answers as to, like, why, like, things happen, but also, like, you know, why would something, like, I don't even know, it's, like, hard to explain, but I think that people are searching, like, for answers that, like, you know, not very many people can provide for them. You know, because, like, there are just so many questions, like, in our lives that, like, just don't have answers. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to, like, just to describe, like, what people are longing for. But I think that, like, you know, people are just searching for answers, and that only, you know, God can provide, you know.
I think humanity as a whole always longs for origin questions, like, where did the earth come from? Where did this all begin? What's my beginning? What's my end?
Why? Yeah. Why this?
Why this?
This
world?
Life. This could be. You know. Why? Yeah.
And you have a generation that has grown up under the postmodern theory of, you know, nothing's really. I mean, what's really true?
Your truth.
My truth. Your truth. Like, that's subjective. That's your truth. So I do think that they're looking for substantial answers to real questions that burn in the heart of human beings. And instead of getting substantial answers over the past, you know, maybe past generations have just been like, well, this is just the way we believe. You just need to, you do it this way. But there's no explanation to why is the evidence in the Bible and in Christianity different than any other religion? Why should I say this is right and everything else is wrong?
Yeah.
And when you don't get those solid answers, you start to think, well, how do you know? Isn't it arrogant to believe that your way is the only way?
Mm-hmm.
The reason people sometimes tend to think that is they're not getting substantial evidence to why this faith is so radically different than every other faith.
Yeah.
And because of that, because of the lack of education, I think we're very biblically illiterate in the United States of America. Oh, I think we have the most opportunity to freely worship in comparison to other countries, and yet we're so biblically illiterate.
That's true.
I would rather you stand up and tell me what I need to know than me search it out in the Bible. And because we don't have biblical literacy, they're not getting solid answers.
Yeah.
You know, to even why are these documents, are these really, has the Bible been corrupted? I mean, you can just take the documents alone and recognize that we have more documents in the Christian faith than any other faith. And just how much they are, like, let's take, for instance, the Dead Sea Scrolls, your evidence for just even the one book of Isaiah being almost identical from when it was thousands of years ago. But if you don't teach people that, they're always just grappling with, is this really true? Why would I bother? You know? And I think we haven't done a good job for your younger generation getting those questions answered.
Mm-hmm.
How about the fact that every other world religion, you're performing for God.
Mm-hmm.
You're performing to earn his favor. You know, you're doing that in Islam. You're doing that in Hinduism. You're doing that even in New Age. You're performing for yourself to get to higher actualization. But like nobody says Jesus did it for you. You can't hit perfection. Mm-hmm. You can't earn your way to him. No matter what you do, you're going to fall short. So he, Jesus, came and was the perfect sin sacrifice because he did all the things you weren't capable of doing.
Yeah.
And he did it because he loved you. Like, it's done already. Like, what a freedom that is. But are people having that question answered legitimately? Because we're so afraid to talk about other people's religions.
Oh, yeah. It's like you said, I think that says in like the book of, I think it's Romans or Acts, I think. It's for no one is righteous, not even one, for we all fall short of the glory of God.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that's a lot of things that, like, you know, people kind of grapple with. So
I maybe even in your generation, too, we're afraid to call sin sin.
Yeah.
Don't tell me what I'm doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you can't have the gospel. You can't. Gospel means good news, right?
Yeah.
You can't have good news unless you know there's bad news.
Mm-hmm. When what's interesting,
bad news is you're a sinner.
Yeah. What's interesting, too, that I've noticed with the younger generation, and I'd be curious your thoughts on it, is taking what I've seen happen is we've taken things that you do and we make it part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So then Jesus, his message is come and see. I love you. Well, now that's being turned around where
your sin becomes your identity.
Yes.
He's rejecting me when the reality is he's rejecting the action. You're accepted, but the sin isn't. But now the sin has become part of who I am.
Yeah. It's like you identify yourself and you say, like, I am that, you know. But Jesus says, like, no, like, you're so much more than that. You know, like, I love you for who I created you and, like, who you are, you know, like, and that's not you.
Yeah, it's the identity becoming caught up in the things that I do. So therefore, if you reject the things that I do, how can you have a loving God when he rejects who I am?
Yeah.
But the reality is he's saying, come to me, just leave the sin at the door.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, the first thing before I'm a husband, before I work for Calvary Chapel, I am a child of God before anything else. And the side effects are I become a husband and hopefully a good husband, hopefully a good employee to the church. Yes. Thank you, Jesus. But it's interesting how have you noticed that type of action where people are attaching their action as part of their identity? And kind of have you ever talked to people and gone, what is the thought process here? Been able to get to the bottom of that?
I personally have seen it. However, I haven't really had like that many conversations with people, but it's like you see it all the time. It's just people like claim that they are their sin. It's kind of like when people say, like, you know, like, oh, like you are what you eat or something like that. So it's like, and it's just not like that. Like you're not that type of person, you know? So,
yeah. And even it's odd because you see people even celebrating. What would I say if somebody goes, oh, I'm autistic, like they almost like they wear that. Autism is a sickness, but they wear it as a badge of honor, and it becomes an excuse for different things.
Yeah. And we are longing for identity, and we mm-hmm. already have it in Christ Jesus. And we don't, as Christians, we have it, but even as Christians, we're watching other people long for something that they can have in Jesus. You don't have to have, I see a lot of this also in the younger generation, is that banner of, if I'm a victim, I am much more likely to be accepted. Like there's this acceptance of helplessness that has become very culturally acceptable and almost celebrated. Like, you know, hey, I'm autistic, or hey, you know, got a little touch of the tism, or I think it's funny sometimes that people will say that in kind of good humor, but mm-hmm. also not like there's things where you're like, well, I have ADHD, I can't do that, or I've been raised by alcoholic parents, and there's always some sort of victim label. Yeah. Because there is something socially acceptable about that that you wouldn't have had maybe 20, 30 years ago.
And it's also like the environment, like for certain people, you know what I mean? It's just like people tell, like, let's say like you have somebody with autism, right? And you have someone tell them like you are autistic, and so many people say that. And then it's like you start to believe it, you mm-hmm. know, like I got diagnosed with ADD when I was younger. Not even very many people know that, but because I don't go around people like saying, hey, like I have ADHD, or like, you know, yeah. I don't tell anybody, because it's just like, it's just not, it's not like who I am, you know, like, yeah, I mean, I got diagnosed with it, and like, yeah, there's like something a little bit different about me and like the way that my brain kind of works, but that's not like, I don't identify myself as,
right,
you know, like being an ADD or like, you know, whatever. So like, it's just not, it's not important, you know?
Right. It's not, it doesn't make me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've been saved for roughly 2 years now. You recently got baptized, yeah. But you got, when I say saved, you say you kind of gave your life to Christ. You grew up in church, right?
Yeah. I did. But it's just, you know, when I say that I recently got saved, it's just, I feel like I always say this, it's just, you can be born and raised in the Christian church, but as you get older, it's like your path really does kind of start to become your own, and you learn something new pretty much every day. So it's just like, you know, yes, you can be born and raised in the Christian church, but it's just your path becomes your own with the Lord. So you can become like recently saved, even though you were born into it.
Sure.
You know, because people, like, you can't get saved for other people, you know, like you have to make that decision on your own. And when you do, that is when your path becomes individualized, you know?
Right. Mike always says, God doesn't have grandchildren.
Yeah. Well, it to me, it was like the way I describe it was, I was living in a house and I always got mail to the house. Mm-hmm. But then one day I realized the letter was addressed to me.
Yeah.
And so then all of a sudden I open it up and I go, wait, this is for me. Where previously, because my heart was closed or my head was stubborn, you know, it felt like I was reading someone else's mail. And so I'm going, what do I need this for? It's not my mail. Where all of a sudden,
really good analogy.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. I never heard anyone say that before.
Yeah. So how did you finally submit? Did you, like, for both Deb and I, we reached low points in our life and finally submitted. What, did you have a similar story, or what was yours?
Yeah. After, it was definitely after I lost my three grandparents, and just, it wasn't just that, like, it was just watching like my parents go through like a hard time, because, you know, grief like affects everybody in different ways. And just, it was hard for me to just kind of just watch and not have like a cure or like a fix or anything that I can do to like fix the pain, you know, cause like you can't fix that. But, so I got to like a really low point in my life, and I just kind of, cause during that process, I kind of like turned away from God a little bit. Like I kind of turn my, I never like fully turned my back on him and like denied him and say like I don't believe anymore. But I just, I kind of walked away, you know, like I wasn't praying as much. Like I didn't really go to church.
Even
like,
silent treatment.
Oh yeah, I did. I did. But then, you know, I think that everything just kind of like came to a head and like, I couldn't bottle it up anymore. And I just kind of said like, you know what? Like I give it all up. Like I surrender. And, you know, I said, God, like I'm sorry. And like, I want you to come back into my life and, you know, change me for the better. And, you know, that is when I started, you know, like reading my Bible and I started just, you know, just kind of becoming more involved, like in the church. And I started going to church again. And it was just, it really did change me for the better. I mean, yeah, of course I still struggle, but you know, what other person doesn't? And
true.
So yeah, it's just, I've pretty much been saved ever since. And I got baptized, I think it was back in October.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Recently.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's going to a baptism as someone that's been a Christian for a while. Mm-hmm. I think if anyone has been a Christian for a while and they're tired or they're just not as inspired.
Yeah.
One of the greatest things you can do is just go watch a baptism.
Mm-hmm. It is pretty glorious.
You know, we live in Florida, so there's a lot of beach baptisms. Back in Chicago, they would do it from the stage.
Yeah.
So that was always nice in Chicago because they would do it once a month or once every other month, but they would do it in service and you got to witness it. And then when I moved to Florida, they do, you know, most of the stuff that we do on the beach.
Beach.
So it's not during service.
It's really, really beautiful.
It really is.
Oh my God.
See it in nature and
To watch you get baptized and come up just full. Everybody has so much joy on their face when they come back up out of the water.
I remember there was this lady that went after me, and whenever she came back from the water, she just raised up her hands and just worshiped. And it was just like
your heart jumps. Yeah, your heart jumped. But yeah, because you can get stagnant. You can sit there. You know, the problem with life is it's so daily.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Christianity really is a marathon, and marathons can get exhausting. And if you find yourself just kind of getting burnt out, man, go watch a baptism.
I think we need to go because I'm getting burnt out.
Yeah,
let's go to the next beach baptism.
It's yeah.
I will definitely. I would 100% get baptized again. I would get baptized 100 times if I could.
You attend Calvary Chapel Melbourne. Do they do it there on site? Do they take you to the beach? Where did you get baptized?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. I was supposed to get baptized with Calvary. And this was a time that I was just so eager to just get baptized. And I kind of changed it last minute because my mom couldn't attend. And I felt bad because I know that my mom would want to be there, but she just kept saying go, just go. Don't worry about me. You know, this is about you.
Aww.
And then, but I was just I just can't I can't deal with the guilt of my mom not being there. So then
she's been praying over you, man.
Oh, yeah. It was, so I changed it to a Sunday morning and it was actually at Elevation, and I had gone to Elevation a few times. Well, I hadn't gone, but I had listened to a couple of their preachings and I do like them. And so I was just kind of all right, screw it. We're going to Elevation.
Getting baptized at Elevation. Okay. But that's, I think that, you know, that, how do you not just laugh at that? And
it's fun.
God loves your enthusiasm, you know,
for sure.
Yeah. It's amazing. And so mom and dad were both able to make it?
Oh, yeah. Everybody came. It was my mom, my dad, my sister, and her boyfriend, actually, my brother-in-law.
Oh, nice.
So it was nice, yeah.
And in the family, were you the only one to get baptized that day, or were other people?
I was the only one to get baptized that day in my family.
Okay.
So my sister had gotten baptized, I think it was maybe 7 years ago, I think.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And you've mentioned, I think, your brother-in-law, he has some really good questions. You guys have some really deep conversation. Was that him, right?
Yeah.
So what are the types of topics that you guys find yourselves, because he's in his 20s, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Yeah. So what are the topics, the conversations that you guys end up having?
Oh boy, it's we do have a lot of like conversations about like God and stuff, and he does tend to ask like really in-depth questions, because it's not that he doesn't believe, it's just, again, he has so many questions. Like, he's just that type of person where he questions a lot of stuff, and he just kind of asks the same questions of like, you know, well, how, like, I get that God loves us, but it's just, if he loves us this much, then like, why did this happen? Or he has the questions of like, why did God even create the world to begin with? Why did God create us? You know, mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's hard because like, you don't have answers to every question.
Yeah. You see that, you see that question a lot in the youth, is if God knew that Adam and Eve were going to fall, why would he even bother to create? Right. If he knew, we live in a beautiful, broken world.
Yeah, he asked that same exact question.
And how did the conversation go? Did you have an answer for him? And how did you guys process through whatever you processed through?
I always say that, you know, God gives us free will. And, you know, yes, I think that God knew, like, in the back of his mind that, like, Adam and Eve Eve was going to sin. But the thing is, God didn't force her to do that. You know, like, she
had to sin too. Don't let him off the hook.
I noticed you're picking on Eve. No, he's in you.
But they had a choice, you know, like, they didn't have to do what they did. But it's like where the free will comes in. Like, they have a choice and they chose to sin. And then that's why, you know, like, that's why sin came upon the world. So, but then he kind of goes back to that question exactly. So if he knew that they were going to do that, then why did he create them? And I'm like, that's a great question that I don't really have the answer to. But I just kind of like, you know, we just got to trust God and like the things that like we don't know. And that's where kind of like, you know.
Yeah. And I would even say, circling all the way back to kind of the way we kicked off the conversation, even in marriage, I do know that when you go through hard seasons, like Deb and I are going through a hard season, not necessarily with each other, but just a hard season in life. When you exit that hard season, your love is even deeper. My boss at Calvary, Fort Lauderdale, he's about the same age I am. And a few years ago, I'd say he and his wife were probably right around the age of 40. She got diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh.
And they went through it. Yeah, I don't know how else to say it other than they went through it. And after they went through it, I was talking with him, just going, you know, so what has God shown you in all of this? And, you know, his answer was much more specific than what I'm about to give. But the main thing was, I realized there's a new depth to the love that I have for my wife because we went through the tough. So the fact that I can mess up and Deb can still love me, she's not with me because everything's going to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
She's with me because she knows my heart and she's willing to put in the hard work that when those hard things happen, she knows that we're going to work on it together and we're going to come through it stronger than ever. And what good is love if at the first sign of trouble, that person flees?
Mm-hmm.
That is not a deep love. It may be a wide love.
Yeah.
But the fact that God is love, how many relationships, not romantic, but maybe romantic, but how many relationships just get more complex the minute love is introduced?
Yeah.
Everything, you know, if some guy comes up to you, you're a waitress, some guy comes up to you as a coworker and expresses that he wants to go out on a date with you, but you don't feel the same way, things get awkward because that love, and that's not love, but you know where I'm going, that right. Affection is rejected.
Mm-hmm.
God is pure love.
Yeah.
So, you know, that rejection that Eve had in that moment that we've all had, God still turned right around and loved her and said, even though you messed up, man, I still love you.
That's true.
And, you know, again, if we had been perfect beings, the level of depth, we would be robots.
Right. That's true. And he could have done it anyway that he wanted, and this was the deepest way to love us. Like, he could have made it, just all we do is just worship him. Then there's no real, if there's no choice to love, it's not love.
Yeah.
there's no choice to walk away. It's not love. If I have to love you, God, then I am just a robot. And he wanted the most authentic love.
And then that's why he gave us like the free will.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And, you know, the logical process. So if you try to walk someone through the logic of it, you know, you go, okay, pretend you're God for just a second.
Mm-hmm. How would you do it?
Well, God has two options, the ability to create or not create.
Yeah.
If you were God, what would you do? Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to say, I would create. Great. You can create. Would you create a world where there's love? Yes or no? Do you want love or do you want robots? Well, I want love. I want someone, you know, the deep affection that I crave in a significant other. Like, love is critical.
I've never thought about it like that before.
Yeah, and it's great. If you want that Deb chose me. I chose Deb. I wasn't programmed for Deb. Mm-hmm. Deb wasn't programmed for me. She had free will. She exercised it. She was wise and realized she wasn't going to do any better.
Oh, is that it? Yeah. Like, you're right. I can't. So, you're the best.
So just
now he's blushing.
Yeah, just keep saying that by all means. But you know that you know when you logically kind of walk through. Well, is it better for God to create or not create? Well, right. Obviously create. Mm-hmm. Okay, if he creates, is it better for him to not give you choice, not give you free will? Oh, yeah, free will. Free will is obvious. We live in a free country.
Yeah.
Freedom is better. Great. So with freedom comes, I can choose not to follow Jesus. And one of the things that I correlate it to is like when you buy a car, there's a manual in the glove box. You can choose to follow the instruction. Like that manual has the audacity to tell you what type of oil to put in your car, how frequently to change it, so on. But why? Because the creators, the builder of that car said, this, we built it this way, and this is how you care for it.
Yep. Yeah.
If you choose not to change your oil, mm-hmm. the ramifications are you have the freedom to choose not to do that.
Yeah.
You are free to not change your oil if you don't want to. But if you don't, there are going to be consequences with it.
That's true.
And so that I always correlate it to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it super interesting that he already put into the plan, like he already knew we were going to sin. There mm-hmm. was no doubt about that. Like he's all knowing.
Yeah.
But he already had a plan of redemption built into creation prior to us ever coming on planet Earth. Like yeah. even think about something as simple as sleep, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So he could have created us. I mean, we sleep how many hours a day? I mean, if you were to take it all in and you live a lifespan of, let's say, 70 years, you have X amount of time that you're sleeping, right? Because you sleep 8, maybe more hours, or unlike Mike, maybe 4 hours a night. But either way, he could have taken all that time and put it all up front and you'd be sleeping and then you wake up. Or he could have done it all at the back end of it and you've lived X amount of years and now you're, you know, 70 or however old you are. And he could have done it on the back end.
Right.
But what he did was every single day you go to sleep and you wake up. And mm-hmm. it's a picture of death and resurrection. Every single day, there's a rhythm to show you that there is death and resurrection. And like he already baked that into the human body to show us that there is coming a death and resurrection. Like the gospel is grafted into creation. You know, just think about the sun goes down every single day and it yep. rises again. Like there's these beautiful pictures of resurrection. Like, so even he gave us the free will and then he showed us there's going to be redemption.
Yeah.
And that's the most loving thing I could think of.
That's true.
Yeah.
And even think about eating mm-hmm. something. Doesn't matter if you're a vegetarian or what, something has to die in order for you to live.
That
it could be
true.
A plant. It could be mm-hmm. a chicken. As we were joking at a time, you have chickens. It could be whatever. It doesn't matter. Something has to die in order for you to live. So it's just every day. That's where I don't understand how people can say, if God exists, where is he? Where is his fingerprint? Why can't I see him? My answer is he is everywhere.
Yeah.
Literally, in order for you to go on living your entire life, if you live to 75, 2 to 3 times a day, something is going to have to die on your behalf in order for you to live. And yeah. It's a beautiful picture
of the gospel. Mm-hmm. He dies so that you can live.
That is what I was literally going to say that.
When we just, what was the, I'm going to truly pick your brain on it. Pastor Bill just did a study.
Okay.
We're in the book of Luke in our Wednesday Bible studies, and there was a term for a worm that is used in the book of Luke. And I don't remember where we were. We're kind of like 2/3 of the way through.
Right.
But there is a worm that is described in the Hebrew word. This worm is only used one other time in the Bible, and it's when Jesus is on the cross. It's when Jesus is on the cross and then this worm. But the picture of the worm, literally, when you study this worm, it crawls up a tree and wedges itself in the tree and then gives birth, and the babies eat the worm. And the only other picture of it, what was it?
It's something cool too, like it spins like a red blood color cocoonish type of thing.
Yeah.
When it dies, like it bleeds. So it's a picture of like
Jesus literally holding himself to the cross, and his children are the ones that you know, we need to be washed in the blood. So even that, just that little picture in Luke, I wish I knew the at least the chapter.
I wish we
didn't
butcher it because built it so beautifully.
But it just that Hebrew word that was used was only used one. And it was just such a beautiful, perfect picture of the gospel. But yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
God's mm-hmm. his thumbprint is on everything.
And like so many people just don't see that. Like,
I think you have to have spiritual eyes to see that. I don't think the unsaved man can see that. Mm-hmm. I think that we are blind before the Lord until he opens our eyes.
We're blind and we're spiritually blind too. Like many people are. Because I think that, you know, the enemy kind of has like the blindfolds on so many mm-hmm. people, you know?
Yeah. Or we don't want to, you know, there are people out there, especially when you watch like debates between Christians and atheists.
Yeah.
There are atheists that knowingly put on the blinders because if they believe, you know, if they believe that Jesus and what the Bible says is true, then it's shining light on a dark part of their life. Maybe they love having sex outside of marriage. Maybe they love going out to the bars, this, that, and the other. And if the Bible is true, what I'm doing is wrong, and I love what I'm doing.
Right.
So many times it's not just
darkness.
Yeah.
And are you familiar with C.S. Lewis, the author? Have you heard of him?
I don't think so.
He's an amazing author. He wrote Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. Have you heard of that? That's a
familiar.
Great children's book. Highly recommended for you. But he was a great apologist, and he has this saying that says, "You believe in the sun because you look up and you see it. Mm-hmm. I believe in the sun because by it, I see everything else."
That is wow.
So instead of, so the atheist may look and they're going, "I want to see God. I want to touch him. I want to physically put my hands on him," rather than the approach of just look at how the world is illuminated.
Yeah.
And in it, you will see Christ. There is no other explanation than that.
That is wow.
He can be a tough author to read because he's very, very, very philosophical, very heady, but man alive, is he a great author for you to take a look at.
I'll definitely have to check him out.
Yeah, he's got some great, that is my favorite C.S. Lewis quote, is that one, because it really is the explanation of, you know, how people respond to Jesus. Are you trying to look at him, or are you looking at everything and just seeing what he created and his beauty and everything?
Yeah.
So it reminds me when I go on a walk to just listen to the birds.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's just, I feel like it's just so cool how like God is like in the details, you know, like God is in the details of the world, and like we see it every day, but like we don't see it, you know, like we don't see it for what it is, you know, we just see like the we see it for what it is, but like we don't see it for what it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
what would it just everything is so perfect.
Yeah.
Like when you wake up in the morning and you hear birds outside your window. Mm-hmm. What if a bird sounded like a pig?
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Birds are beautiful.
Yeah.
They sound beautiful. And you get to wake up hearing something beautiful rather than snorting.
Yeah.
So just like that little detail. Just
yeah. It's a masterpiece creation. Mm-hmm. It's such a beautiful masterpiece.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once you turn around and you look at the world and you see it being illuminated by the sun rather than looking at the sun, you have to sit there and go, how do you not believe?
Yeah.
I don't, I know Frank Turek says it. I don't know if he's the originator, but I don't have enough faith to be an atheist.
Yeah. Either do I. And yeah, I do think he is the originator of that.
I know he wrote a book with that title. Mm-hmm. It probably is him, but not 100% sure, but yeah, all good stuff. But I think, we'd love to have you come back in and just chat more about.
You know, this was fun.
Oh, yeah. This was so fun.
Yeah, thank you for coming in and just having conversation with us and asking questions and giving your perspective. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're welcome back anytime.
Of course.
Yeah, send over questions and. Yeah, we love just sitting down and talking through things with people. So.
Oh, I love talking about this. I love this. Like,
yeah.
So fun.
Yes.
If you have any other, friends that have questions that maybe we can help address or just talk through, and we'd love to have them.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it would be amazing to have people that aren't necessarily believers to just sit and ask them questions, like, hey, if you don't believe there's a God, where do you think life would come from? Mm-hmm. What do you think is their purpose to life? I'm always fascinated by people's responses to that. And I think it's great to just get educated on, where people are coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not to sit down and have a conversation and go, you need to give your life. No, explain to me what your perspective is.
Yeah. Being genuinely curious about how people view life is such an interesting way to live life. Mm-hmm. you get to meet a lot of people and it gives you an opportunity to love them right where they're at and learn. You're always going to learn something about someone's perspective,
and that's where I always say, like, you can both gain something out of it.
Yeah, when you don't agree, I learn more from people that have different beliefs than I do. Mm-hmm. Than people that have the same. It helps me understand the logic of how they get from point A to point B. If they're not stupid, even though social media will make, if you're a Republican, social media's job is to make Democrats look stupid and vice versa. That is not the case.
Yeah.
And sitting down and having that conversation and going, okay, how did you get from point A to point B? Walk me through that.
Mm-hmm.
That really helps. It helps both sides, you know. So, yeah, always good to have these kinds of conversations. So thanks for coming in, man.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you all
for having me.
Absolutely.
My pleasure.
Well, Deb, another episode in the books. You got the sign off. You got to remind people to do something, right?
Oh, you're so funny. Hey, guys, we would really love for you to like and subscribe to the podcast. Tell a friend. Say, hey, I got a great podcast for you to listen to.
Yeah, tell a friend, tell your parents, tell your grandparents. Like,
there you go.
Absolutely. But thank you guys so much. Yeah, for tuning in. And thank you again for coming in and chatting with us, hanging out.
Of course. Thank you, guys.
Love to do it again. But for our Detours family, we'll see you again in a few weeks.
Bye, guys. We'll be right back.